Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Audio Open Lines. We're listening to a PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly report on the children of polygamy. We've heard a lot about the girls. There's the angle on the boys who are not wanted in the polygamous community because they're competition for the limited number of women. It's simple mathematics. Just run the numbers. And in kind of a backward way, it's their ticket out of this lifestyle, which at least the ones they're talking to here on PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly did not find it the blessed lifestyle it's described as being by those who practice polygamy. The issues raised here are interesting. Young men who are asked to leave or kicked out on some sort of false pretense because their competition with the older men in the polygamous community, the young women who manage to leave and are told that if they leave, they're essentially leaving the kingdom of heaven and any chance that they had of enjoying heavenly bliss as Mormons. And the other angle I mentioned before the break is that this is Mormonism. This is 200-proof Mormonism. This is Joseph Smith Brigham Young Mormonism. In a way, in some ways, a time capsule to the founding and the earliest days of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The fact that you have a bunch of Salt Lake Mormons, and good thing they don't practice polygamy. That's, you got to commend them for giving up on the practice. But the fact that you've got a very large Salt Lake City-based Mormon community that stretches across the world that doesn't practice polygamy, that's the aberration from the teachings of Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. Make no mistake about it, Joseph Smith and Brigham Young, were they alive today, would most likely condemn the Salt Lake City Mormons for failing to practice what they consider to be part and parcel of one's entrance into heaven, polygamy. And they'd actually be, I think, on the side of Warren Jeffs. Of course, on the wrong side of U.S. law, but hadn't seemed to hurt Warren Jeffs very much until recently. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, audio open lines, talking about the children of polygamy. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Back to the story.
How was school today? Long.
The two polygamous wives we spoke with, who are part of another polygamous group, say if 14-year-olds are being forced into marriage, it's the exception, not the rule.
I think that was just a total exaggeration to get the rise out of the public about all the young girls getting married and having to marry these old men.
It's not like it's all about sex. Your marriage is about family, it's about relationship, it's about the values that you have.
But critics say enforcing those values, at least among Jeff's disciples, borders on abuse.
Did your dad ever punish you?
Yeah, I was on house arrest for a while.
What did that mean?
Like, get an anklet bracelet on your foot. Couldn't go 100 feet without, within the perimeters of the yard.
Everyone agrees that boys from the creek are good workers. Some started working construction when they were 10 years old. Long days with sometimes no pay. The problem is most never get more than an eighth grade education.
Most of their education is focused on religiosity and Warren Jeff's perspective of the world. They don't know the history of the United States or the Constitution. Most of them don't have math or English skills.
They don't teach you about sex, marriage, anything like that.
And once these kids are on the outside, they often get into trouble.
I had hooked up with the wrong guy and started getting into, like, drugs and stuff.
They've been told if they leave, they're damned to hell. So they say their attitude is, I'm damned to hell anyways.
What the majority of people do when they leave is they get way hard into the drugs, alcohol, stuff like that.
Did you?
Yeah, for the first year, I was into all that. And, I mean, it gets old just like everything else, and it ruins your lives. And so I'm pretty much out of all that now.
Kevin's adjustment to the outside world has been guided in part by Michelle. She's involved in an effort to give these kids a chance at a different life. This home provides temporary housing. The staff will help the kids get an education and jobs. But still, Michelle and Elaine say it isn't enough.
There's a lot of other ones out there. They're living in their cars. They're getting in a lot of legal trouble.
9 of Melinda's brothers and sisters have left Colorado City, but 18 are still living there.
I think people should intervene, like, go out there and try to stop it.
But polygamous wives we spoke with don't see it that way.
For some reason, in the United States of America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, God forbid, that we're not allowed to live our religion.
Will you join a church?
No, I think it ruined my whole church experience. Like,
growing up that way?
Yeah. Nobody's going to tell me how I'm supposed to live my life. It's too scary, because now I look back on it, I was like, I was so controlled.
No one knows how many more kids from the creek will be coming out now that Warren Jeffs is in prison. And no one here is willing to talk about the future of this polygamous town. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Colorado City, Arizona.
I can, you know, it might be a good project for the National Guard, if you ask me. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. Let's go straight to the phones. Ross is patiently waiting in his car. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Todd. How you doing?
Very well.
I just got in kind of maybe halfway through, just before the commercial break there. And I don't know if you saw the Oprah special maybe a week ago where they had the polygamist families on. Actually, they called them plural families. Really showing the legitimacy of this lifestyle. And it was interesting because it showed a family in this enormous house and this what they made look like a well-functioning, very happy, very good family with 3 wives, 1 father, and 30 children. The whole argument was, and I just heard it brought up there on the PBS special, was in a country full of life choices, why can't we have a life choice? And I was wondering when that would come up, you know, when we're talking about choices in marriage and choices in lifestyle and what is the definition of morality. I was wondering, when something like that would actually come up, and then there it is on Oprah, being put out as a viable lifestyle, and it's definitely troubling.
Hey Ross, did the Oprah program have any counterpoint to those who are advocating kind of the wholesome nature of polygamy and plural marriage?
I did not see any. Well, no, there was one at the end where they actually went to what is it, the Colorado City where.
Yeah.
Where they went in there and a woman had left in the middle of the night with her 7 children, and she took the reporters back in, and she was definitely shunned from the community, and it was showing that aspect of it, and she was saying how in that community it was not a good lifestyle at all, like the others from this other community were saying. And you could definitely see a difference between the two communities. One was, you know, big fences where you couldn't see over into the houses, whereas the other one was just these wide open yards with these huge houses and just very, I guess what you could say, friendly, looking. Just the difference between the two is what they were showing.
All right, Ross, thank you very much. Well, I guess I can't say I'm surprised that there would be, this is the marketplace of ideas, and everything's a lifestyle choice, and who knows, maybe polygamists are born that way. It is a little disingenuous for them to call it plural marriage, because plural marriage, strictly speaking, would be either one wife with multiple husbands, or one husband with multiple wives, or any combination in between. That would be what they call polyamory. Polygamy is one husband, many wives, or at least more than one wife. Now, remember, there are theological reasons that Mormons don't practice polyamory or plural marriage. It is not one wife with many husbands. It doesn't work that way. because the salvation, the priesthood, and the connection to one's future deity comes through the marriage to the man, which is why there's one man and many wives. But no real big surprise that Oprah would say, hey, let's just think about it as another lifestyle. Greg's calling from his car. Hi, Greg. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Always curious when I'm trying to tell people about Christianity and they bring up a question, which hasn't happened many times, but I'm always afraid that it will because I don't have an answer for it. and it is, given that it's Old Testament, what about King David, all of his wives, and Solomon, all of his wives? If it's so wrong now, why was it not wrong for them?
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a very good question, and there is an answer for it, in fact. Scripture nowhere advocates polygamy. Does it describe polygamy as, at least in the case of those, the big names that we know of, Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and on down through the line, you mentioned David and Solomon, kind of the king of, not only the king of Israel, but the king of all polygamists. He had hundreds of wives and concubines, which would have been absolutely normal cultural practice for royalty in those days. It describes the practice of polygamy among the patriarchs, so to speak, but never, ever does God express his approval of that practice. Now, the problem is, if you're looking for a verse that says, you shall have only one wife, you won't find it. But you've got Abraham, who has a perfectly good wife, Sarah, who at the behest of his wife, Sarah, because she's childless, takes another wife, Hagar. And then it kind of multiplies. By the time you get to the 12 tribes of Israel, you know the 12 tribes of Israel are in fact the product of one man, Jacob, and four wives. Actually, two wives and two concubines. And it is interesting that you'd nary hear a word, no voice from the sky saying, Jacob, you shouldn't have more than one wife. Although, if you read the narratives about these men and their wives, their polygamy seldom turns out well. In fact, never turns out well. Now, you ask, does the Bible, by its silence, approve of polygamy? The answer is no, because it's a terrible way to argue from Scripture that somehow, if the Bible is silent on a subject, it must implicitly approve of whatever that may be. I mean, by that reasoning, the Bible approves of child abuse, child pornography, dog fighting, cock fighting, whatever you want to do, really. Just go through a list of things the Bible doesn't mention, and if silence in the Bible means approval, then you've got a pretty long list of things that you can go out and do. Illicit drug use, never has anything to say about illicit drug use, not explicitly. So we don't argue that because the Bible remains silent on a certain issue, in this case polygamy, that it somehow implicitly approves of polygamy. So when you ask that question, if it's wrong today, why wasn't it wrong then? I answer, it was wrong then. Now, where do you go in Scripture to get that assertion that it was wrong? Well, I go where Jesus goes. Jesus is asked actually a question of serial polygamy or serial monogamy. There's a certain woman who ends up with all sorts of multiple husbands, and they all die, and whose wife is she going to be in eternity? And Jesus says, well, first of all, marriage doesn't apply in the life to come. And second of all, this is not the way it was from the beginning. And he addresses divorce. He says, from the beginning, God made them male and female. One Adam, one Eve. This is God's original intent. Now, after the fall, things certainly fall apart almost immediately. So, the original model is husband and wife. And then you have other passages you can go to where St. Paul's talking about the requirements for a deacon or for an overseer in the church, kind of the model family man in some ways. And he says husband of only one wife. even though polygamy would not have been illegal in any sense. Paul says the standard is husband of only one wife. But bear in mind, of course, that the true blue 200-proof Mormons practice polygamy, and they don't really need Old Testament patriarchs to back up their case. They got Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. Andy's calling from Kirkwood. Hi, Andy.
Well, Todd, the verse in Genesis and repeated by Jesus is that a man shall leave his husband and one. And mother, excuse me, his father and mother, and cleave to his wife. It doesn't say cleave to his wives, does it? So there's score one for a single marriage.
and the two shall become one flesh.
Yes, exactly.
Two and one, yes.
But the question I had regarding the Mormon polygamy is I can see where perhaps a wealthy man might be able to support two or three wives, or four wives maybe, like is legal in Islam. But how in the world are you going to support 19 or 20 and the children that are offsprings from that? That'd be an interesting thing to hear about. I'll take the answer off the air.
I can answer part of that question. Actually, I'll answer it in two different ways. If you're Warren Jeffs, it's easy. Everybody supports you. The other untold story about this community of Warren Jeffs' fundamentalist Mormon faith is that it's essentially a commune. So the entire community's resources are pooled to support all the families and the children, okay? It's not a democracy, it's a dictatorship, and it's not a capitalist microcosm, it's in fact a commune. The other way, of course, we heard about this, this was probably 5-10 years ago, polygamists of a more militant variety who simply engage in welfare fraud. They legally marry one wife, then they keep all these other wives, and the way that they have these wives supported is that they get a check from the state. I don't know the ins and the outs of how the fraud is perpetrated, but that's how they were able to get some of the more militant polygamists on welfare fraud. They let the state pay for it. The state that says you shouldn't have more than one wife pays for a guy to have more than one wife and as many children as he can produce. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. Scott in Fisher, Illinois writes, how do the Mormon fundamentalists or Brigham Young or Joseph Smith handle 1 Timothy 3, 2 through 7? Is that the husband of but one wife? Well, you must remember, trying to hold Joseph Smith or Brigham Young to the standard of Holy Scripture is a slippery business. First of all, Joseph Smith made it quite clear that, at least according to the revelation he said he received from God, the New Testament as we know it and the Old Testament as we know it had been hopelessly corrupted and needed to be corrected rightly understood in light of the new revelation, which is the Book of Mormon and the other holy books that he claimed to have received by direct revelation from God. So they can look at that and they can say two things. They can say, one, well, that was then and this is now. This is a new revelation. This is another testament. This is remember, they have ongoing revelation. God can change his mind. He can shift his positions and he can come up with new ideas all day long. So if you discount the reliability of the Old and New Testaments, which Joseph Smith most certainly does, and if you claim that you hear directly from God new revelations, corrections, amendations to things that God may have said before, you can pretty much write your own ticket and make it up as you go along, can't you? Up next during Audio Open Lines, a Fox News report on what they're calling the Dr. Phil of Islam and his peculiar marriage advice.
The Muslim world's version of Dr. Phil may not be making much of a love connection as a Saudi cleric advises young Muslim men to beat their wives. With more on this bizarre story, we have Laura Engel live in New York. Laura?
Hi, Molly. Well, this self-styled doctor, Muhammad Al-Arifi, offers what he calls good advice for how husbands should handle their wives if they run into a marital snag. Not with tender, loving care, not with counseling, but with discipline in the form of a big stick. Now, this all comes in talk show format, complete with a couch, a studio audience, with a particular prop, what Muhammad Al-Arifi calls a toothpick, holding what looks like a small tree branch. He says this is the best way to beat a woman. As we listen in on the tape, here's how part of it translates. If you beat her with a toothpick, or if you beat her lightly with your hand, and so on, it is meant to convey, woman, it has gone too far. I can't bear it anymore. He says hitting in the face is a big no-no, explaining, even when it comes to animals, if you wanted your camel or donkey to start walking, you are not allowed to beat it in the face. If this is true for animals, it is all the more true when it comes to humans. Muhammad Al-Arifi cautions not to hit women on the hands either. He advises to beat her where it will not leave marks or will cause any permanent damage. And wait, there's more. The doctors say that husbands should hit their wives only after she has been admonished once, twice, four, or 10 times, and also after he has refused to share their bed.
Interesting advice. Not exactly Dr. Phil. Dr. Phil seems to have a little more sense than that. But this is, look, this is a Saudi cleric who is simply repeating what the tradition is and what Muhammad claims to have heard from God. Do you see? We had a guest on, it wasn't too long ago, who said, and I think it was Dr. Ergun Kaner, a former Muslim, now a Christian, teaches at Liberty University. Dr. Kaner said that Islam is medieval and Middle Eastern Mormonism. In fact, if you look at the claims and the scenario, the life scenario of Muhammad, relatively uneducated man, perhaps illiterate, claimed to have received a direct revelation from God, did not know at first whether it was true, and then later found out that it probably was, the revelation that all religions had gone terribly astray and needed to be restored to their original pristine state, a la Islam, received a book, apparently a model of one kept in heaven by Allah. Compare that with Joseph Smith, a relatively uneducated man, not completely illiterate, claims to have received a vision and a revelation from God, a book. And the revelation is all religions up to this point have become hopelessly and strayed away from the truth. And a restoration is needed, in particular of Christianity, to its original or perhaps its new and improved variety. Both of them advocated polygamy. To give Muhammad his due, he didn't advocate the kind of polygamy that even Joseph Smith advocated. Both of them ended up having to take up arms to defend themselves and their wandering communities, and both of them grew into world religions. The devil has only a few tricks up his sleeve. But when they work, they apparently work very, very well. We'll be right back.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Concordia University St. Louis Center serves working adults by offering degrees in business management, human resource management, criminal justice, general studies, and theology. Classes meet one night a week. Concordia University is located near the intersection of 44 and 270. And for more information about Concordia University St. Louis Center, call 314-984-8840. That's 314-984-8840, Concordia University.
Hi, this is Chuck Rathert, host of the Bible Study. One of the things I love to do is meet our AM850 KFUO listeners. And one of the best ways to do that is to take our program on the road. So I invite you to come to Timothy Lutheran Church in St. Louis on Thursday, November 8th. Our guest that day for our assigned text in Genesis will be the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Dr. Gerald Kieschnick. I hope to see you there Thursday, 10:05 a.m. at Timothy in St. Louis.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Congressional pro-lifers stood their ground in a House Foreign Affairs Committee meeting last week. The topic was the Mexico City policy that bans U.S. funds from going to organizations that promote abortion in foreign countries. Republicans stood toe-to-toe in defense of life against a stacked panel. Steve Jordahl reports the interchange was heated at times.
The committee didn't have any legislation to consider, nor were there any votes taken. It was simply what Chairman Tom Lantos of California likely thought would be a chance to pounce on the pro-life perspective.
The United States refuses to work with these world health leaders thanks to the mindless global gag rule.
The pro-life members like Florida's Elena Ross Leighton, Bob Inglis of South Carolina, and Chris Smith of New Jersey flooded the hearing room and stood their ground.
Abortion, Mr. Chairman, is violence against children. It is extreme child abuse. It is cruelty to children.
The panel of experts, usually treated with deference as guests, was not spared a barrage of pointed questions and stern rebukes. Toward the end, an exasperated Dan Burton of Indiana refused to let Duff Gillespie of the Bill and Melinda Gates Institute off the hook.
I can also submit, for the record, other research.
Well, if you're going to give an opinion on that, why won't you give an opinion on whether it's a living being?
I did not ask for your opinion on this,
and I don't want it. I want you to tell me whether or not a fetus in a woman's womb is a living being.
Bills overturning the Mexico City policy passed in both the House and the Senate, but President Bush has promised to veto the legislation. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
The amount the government gives to family planning efforts overseas has increased over the years, rounding out at $441 million a year. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Why not send a high school-age man from your congregation to Taste of the Sim, January 19th through the 21st, on the campus of Concordia Seminary, St. Louis? Taste of the Sim gives high school men the opportunity to experience seminary life. For more information on Taste of the Sim, January 19th through the 21st, at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, visit the What's New section of our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-800-822-9545.
You can share the real meaning of Christmas with your young children and grandchildren in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, titled What Happened to Merry Christmas? It's published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this new children's book at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, What Happened to Merry Christmas?
I have our book of the month for November right in front of me. What Happened to Merry Christmas is a children's book, and it's illustrated, as one might expect a good children's book to be, a picture book, mostly. You can find out more about the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. It's even got an Advent wreath in there. It's not just about Christmas. It's about what Christmas is really supposed to be about. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, What Happened to Merry Christmas? Call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or visit our website. The book is right there, Whatever Happened to Merry Christmas, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. It's audio open lines. Oh, coming up in, let's see, about a half hour, we're going to be doing our Issues Etc. listener comment line. Just some things gathered over the last week or so from the Issues Etc. comment line. Coming up in about a half hour, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. So the Muslim Dr. Phil, the talk show host to, apparently he is Saudi, he's a Saudi cleric, innocently, apparently, advising men on how to beat their wives. It's assumed that they will be beating their wives from time to time. Give them a warning, give them multiple warnings, refuse to go to bed with them, but when it push comes to shove, then push comes to shove. Now, this shocks us, and the shock here isn't only cultural, but this shocks us. We look at this and we say, there are still places in the world. This is Saudi Arabia. Have you seen how developed Saudi Arabia is? One of the wealthiest nations per capita on earth? But a Muslim nation, where the beating of wives is the fodder for afternoon television talk shows. Imagine just for a brief moment if Dr. Phil, perhaps suffering from temporary insanity, were to suggest that men beat their wives lightly with their hands after multiple warnings and refusing to have conjugal relations, but nonetheless beat their wives maybe with a tree branch too. As a way of saying, in the words of the imam there in Saudi Arabia, "Woman, this has gone too far, I can take no more." If Dr. Phil, in a moment of temporary insanity, suggested such a thing. But our shock is not only cultural. This teaching is, again, like the whole polygamy issue, this has its theological roots in the theology that is Islam. So what do you think about his advice in Islam's Dr. Phil? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, you might be tempted to make light of this, but remember, this kind of practice is just considered the normal way of conducting one's marriage in the Islamic world. The reason he talks about it so easily, so apparently innocently, is because he doesn't think there's anything wrong at all with beating your wife. In fact, it's a husband's duty to do this, if he's a good husband. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issues ETC at KFUO.org. It's not just worldviews, it's not just culture. The two theologies produce two completely different things. False teaching hurts people. False teaching has its consequences, whether it's in its extreme form like the false teaching of Islam. Not a benign or a neutral thing, not when it's practiced consistently. The only reason that Islam appears to be benign or neutral to us Westerners is because our contact, by and large, with Islam is with moderate Muslims who have been Westernized, who've had the distinctive nature of their religion polished away by Western ideas and mores and taboos. Now, staying on the issue of Islam, this is a Reuters story about something that is forbidden in Islam, the marriage of a Shiite and of a Sunni.
It's a love story as old as time itself. Two star-crossed lovers defy all odds to be together. But this story is very real. 26-year-old Muslim Ghali is from a mainly Sunni area south of Baghdad. He fell in love with 25-year-old Inas Mikhlef, who is a Shiite.
I did not think about breaking it up or anything like that. I loved the girl, and she returned my love. And we have never discussed the fact of being a Sunni and she being a Shiite. We are, God willing, against such sectarianism.
Not long ago, a Sunni-Shiite wedding would have been commonplace. But now the union is a symbol of defiance against sectarianism, which has engulfed the country. Luckily, both families support the marriage, and the groom's father, Ghali Aboud, said he was never concerned about religious differences.
We do care about the girl's reputation and her morals, and do not care about religious differences. She's a good girl, and the first thing we knew about it was that he loved her and she loved him, and so we worked to get them married.
There is also a small incentive. The government is giving $1,500 to any man who marries a woman from a different sect. Ghali said the money will go towards the wedding and furniture for the couple's new home. Stephanie McIntyre, Reuters.
Well, there's an interesting story. I guess there's another way of moderating Islam, have the various sects of Islam intermarry, and I guess it is. It's actually kind of a smart idea, if you ask me. I mean, if you've got Shiites and Sunnis bent upon killing one another in the streets, you marry a few to one another, you have enough there will be the decision of whether to raise them Shiite or Sunni, but I don't know. I mean, I obviously am not taking the differences between these two very seriously because I believe they're both equally wrong, but seems to make sense to me.
I just want to talk about that little jingle, Reuters jingle at the end. Don't you love that? Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, we need a
jingle.
Got to
keep
that
in there.
Well, normally I cut it out, but apparently you were in charge of that thing on that piece.
I love it. I love it. It's like, have you ever used the program Quicken?
Once.
It's got this cool little jingle.
Back when I had the illusion of managing my money. Yeah, I once
used
Quicken.
Yes, yes. I've got my budget on Quicken. And,
it didn't surprise me.
And you go into it. I don't know how. I can't do it justice. I'll have to memorize it tonight when I get home.
You're not going to sing, though. You have to find a way
dun,
of doing
dun, dun.
It. No.
That's the Reuters. I gotcha.
See, when we do pre-production for Issues, etc., Jeff comes into my office and he tells me what bump music he'd like to use for the various segments that we do by singing them to me. So I hear a lot of Jeff singing before we ever come on the air, which is why I forbid it when we're on the air.
I did not sing last night's bump music, Hell's Bells or Highway
yes,
to
you
Hell
did.
Or Burning in Hell.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
It was after we chose it, and you actually did the whole beginning riff of Hell's Bells. You did,
I
right here
the
in this
words
studio.
To it, I go...
No, you didn't. No, that's what you did. See, that's that qualifies as singing.
That's all
book.
I know from the song.
That's enough. Kathy's calling from St. Charles. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I had several thoughts with the last story, the one about Muslims beating their wives and how to do it.
Yes.
Well, I think, one, it's a good story to get out. I think people need to know what these... what this religion teaches. I think, you know, the women, I thought of the women who, after 9/11, a lot of, they said that there was an increase in a conversion to Islam from, you know, and it, a lot of it was apparently white suburban housewives. So I just wondered if they knew about that when they converted. And I guess the other thing I think of is I'm glad they tell them to use some restraint. Otherwise, I don't think many Muslim women would survive matrimony. And I guess the other thought is when it said, you know, to beat them where it doesn't show, well, that's just about anywhere if they wear a burqa. So I feel sorry for the women.
Well, yeah, so do I. And as I said, the temptation is to make light of it.
No,
and you can't when you think about what these women are living with.
Yeah.
And you wonder, why does the imam have to go on his talk show and urge restraint on the part of men beating their wives?
That's pretty scary.
It's not as though he's saying, come on, husbands, beat your wives. There's not enough wife beating out there. He's actually saying, take it easy, guys. You don't have to beat them and leave a mark, and you don't have to hit them with something bigger than this tree branch I'm holding here in my hand or your own hand. He's urging restraint, which tells you that the Muslim Dr. Phil might have noticed some problems in the whole wife-beating scenario under the guise of Islam. Another surprising story that you kind of have mainstream Islam with the wife-beating story. Then you have the marriage or the marriages of Shiite to Sunni. And then the question, is Islam becoming accepting of homosexuality? Was it Mahmoud Ahmadinejad who was in the country a couple of weeks ago in New York, and one of the things he did in the midst of a rambling speech to Columbia University, I think, he claimed that there, various reported, he claimed that there were no homosexuals in Iran or that there were fewer homosexuals than in the United States in Iran. But according to a new documentary made by a Muslim who is gay, perhaps Islam is becoming more accepting of homosexuality. This story comes from the BBC.
Prabhu Sharma researching and making his film has been a major undertaking. He's spent 6 years traveling to a dozen countries, often filming in secret, collecting more than 400 hours of footage, hearing from Muslims who say they are gay.
I think everything in my life led up to me making this film. I'm a gay Muslim myself. So many of the films about us are mediated through Western eyes. So I felt uniquely privileged, if you will, to be able to go on this journey for 6 years around the world, you know, documenting some very personal stories of some really remarkable individuals.
The aim of this Indian filmmaker is to show that it is possible to reconcile being a Muslim with being gay. He follows several individuals engaged in the struggle, both men and women. Some have their faces obscured, fearing retribution. He shot sequences in India, where attitudes are relatively relaxed. But there are disconcerting images from other countries. A young man in Iran who claims he was lashed because of being gay. But according to the filmmaker, punishment varies from country to country. It's not uniformly harsh.
You know, it's easy to think that the death penalty for homosexuality is being meted out on a daily basis in countries that have Sharia law. As long as you are not marching down the street and holding a pride banner and saying that you are openly gay, for the most part, you're allowed to be.
New York City's biggest mosque here at the Islamic Cultural Center on Manhattan's Upper East Side is just a short distance away from where Pavaj Sharma lives. The prevailing view inside the mosque, and one shared by millions of Muslims around the world, is that homosexuality and Islam just cannot coexist.
Allahu Akbar. Islam, you know, punishes it very sternly. Our faith does not rely, you know, or depend on these people who are on the fringe or marginal people. Our faith depends on great scholars who are the exponents of Islam. What they say is the rule. What they reject will never be accepted.
You talk about these people who are on the margins, these gay people who maintain they are Muslim and gay.
Yes.
They are very severely punished, and we see that actually in the documentary. Do you condone that kind of punishment, physical punishment?
Well, it's not a matter of condonement. It's a matter of the penalty, you know, imposed by Islam. Whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, you know, it is there. And you cannot, for example, say, well, I criticize it, or it's too much, or whatever.
How can you actually reconcile being gay and being a Muslim? Because the teachings of the Quran actually condemn homosexuality, don't they?
Well, what is happening in Islam today is for everyone to try to engage in rereading the Quran in the year 2007, in looking at the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad and taking from them what is the best. The condemnation of homosexuality in the Quran is not that clear.
But what do you say to Muslim clerics who say that really you've got to stay very, very close to the original writings?
There has been a long tradition in Islam of ijtihad, or independent reasoning. You hope for people to see the humanity in the subjects of this film, the struggles they have been through, the pain they've had to face, and then to not look at them just through the prism of orthodox thinking, but to look at them as other devout Muslims.
Pavaj Sharma is convinced his film can help change attitudes. He's won some good reviews for his documentary, which is currently on the festival circuit. He would now like to show it to Muslim audiences in the Muslim world. Tom Brook, BBC News, New York.
Well, I guess there are some similarities after all. I mean, at least among Christian liberals and Islamic liberals. If you heard the young gay Muslim who's making the documentary and becoming quite famous for doing it, he calls for a rereading of the Quran. How is that any different from the Christian liberals' call for a rereading of Holy Scripture? We need to reread it with 21st century eyes, they tell us. Or calling for a selective reading. He says you read it and then you take the best. That is, you take those things that you find agreeable. That doesn't sound any different from Christian liberalism. And after all, says the gay Muslim who's making the documentary, the Quran's condemnation of homosexuality just isn't that clear. It could be word for word from the mouth of Christian liberals who say of homosexuality or other things that they find disagreeable in Scripture, come on, it's not really that clear after all. It's ambiguous. It could mean anything. Anything except that the Bible condemns homosexuality. He calls for reason, applying reason over the Quran, or he called it a reasonable reading of the Quran. really there's not that big of a difference between what he calls for with respect to the Quran and what Christian liberals call for with respect to Holy Scripture. And they both disparage what he called orthodox thinking. We need to stop all this orthodox thinking. So I guess whether you're a liberal in Islam or a liberal in Christianity, oddly enough, your modus operandi is pretty much the same when it comes to your holy book. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. Well, the GOP presidential candidate, a GOP presidential candidate was one of Tim Russert's guests yesterday on Meet the Press. It was none other than Fred Thompson, who got to sit for about 45 minutes with Tim Russert and answer some pretty tough questions, among them questions about his position on abortion, especially as it relates to the Republican Party platform of 2004.
This is the 2004 Republican Party platform, and here it is. We say the unborn child has a fundamental individual right to life which cannot be infringed. We support a human life amendment to the Constitution. We endorse legislation to make it clear that the 14th Amendment protections apply to unborn children. Our purpose is to have legislative and judicial protection of that right against those who perform abortion. Could you run as a candidate on that platform promising a human life amendment banning all abortions?
No.
You would not?
No. I have always, and that's been my position the entire time I've been in politics. I thought Roe versus Wade was wrongly decided. I think this platform originally came out as a response, particularly to Roe versus Wade, because of that. Before Roe versus Wade, states made those decisions. I think people ought to be free at state and local levels to make decisions that even Fred Thompson disagrees with. That's what freedom is all about. And I think the diversity we have among the states, the system of federalism we have, where power is divided between the state and federal government, has served us very, very well. I think that's true of abortion. I think Roe versus Wade hopefully one day will be overturned and we can go back to the pre-Roe versus Wade days.
Each but state could make their own abortion laws.
Yeah, but to have an amendment compelling, going back even further than pre-Roe versus Wade, have a constitutional amendment to do that, I do not think would be the way to go.
We went back to your papers at the University of Tennessee and read through them. This is what you said back in 1994 as a candidate. Here's the first one. I'm not willing to support laws that prohibit early-term abortions. I'm not suddenly upon election to the Senate going to know when life begins and where that place ought to be exactly. It comes down to whether you believe life begins at conception. I don't know in my own mind if that is the case, so I don't feel the law ought to impose that standard on other people.
Yeah.
So you yourself don't know when life begins.
No. I didn't know then.
You know now?
My head has always been the same place. My public position has always been the same. I've been 100% pro-life in every vote I've ever cast in my service in the United States.
Oh, but, now. Senator, you say that, but you're for states having...
Let me
finish, because this is important. You're for allowing states to have pro-abortion rights. And you yourself, and I have 10 different statements from you, say that you would not ban abortion. It's a woman's right. And you would not ban it in the first trimester?
No. Well, you've just said two different things here. As you know, it's a complex issue concerning whether or not you're going to have a federal law, whether or not you're going to have a federal constitutional amendment, those kinds of things. Nobody's proposed a federal law on this. Nobody's recently proposed a federal constitutional amendment. I had an opportunity to vote on an array of things over 8 years. Whether it be partial birth abortion, whether it be a Mexico City policy, whether it be transporting young girls across state lines to avoid parental notification laws, all that, 100% pro-life. But let me finish on my point. And my legal record is there, and that's the way I would govern if I was president. I would take those same positions. No federal funding for abortion, no nothing that would in any way encourage abortion. When I saw... again, all consistent with what I've said. People ask me, hypothetically, you know, okay, it goes back to the states. Somebody comes up with a bill, and they say, we're going to outlaw this, that, or the other. And my response was, I do not think it is a wise thing to criminalize young girls and perhaps their parents as aiders and abettors or perhaps their family physician. And that's what you're talking about. It's not a sense of the Senate. you're talking about a potential criminal law. I said, those things are going to ultimately be won in the hearts and minds of people. I'm probably a pretty good example of that. Although my head and my legislative record's always been the same, when I saw that sonogram of my little now 4-year-old, it's changed my heart. It's changed the way I look at things. I was looking at my child when I saw that, and I knew that, and I felt that, and that's the way I feel today. And I think life begins at conception. It was abstract to me before. I was a father earlier when I was very young. I was busy. I went about my way. One of the maybe few advantages you have by getting a little bit older.
So while you believe that life begins at conception, the taking of a human life?
Yes, I do.
You would allow abortion to be performed in states, if chosen by states, for people who think otherwise?
I do not think that you can have a law that would be effective and that would be the right thing to do, as I say, in terms of potentially. You can't have a law that cuts off an age group or something like that, which would potentially take young girls in extreme situations and say, basically, we're going to put them in jail. To do that, I just don't think that that's the right thing to do. It cannot change the way I feel about it morally, but legally and practically, I've got to recognize that fact. It is a dilemma that I'm not totally comfortable with, but that's the best I can do in resolving it in my own mind.
So what do you make of Fred Thompson's position on abortion? Russert was pretty tough on him, and he got a chance to say quite a number of things in that short response. He believed that Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided, that the decision about the legality of abortion and all of its nuances belongs at the state and local level. He wants to return, in essence, to the pre-Roe situation, where states had all their own laws and the federal government had nothing to say about abortion per se. He does not think it's a good idea to have a life amendment to the Constitution, which is what the Republican Party platform for 2004, which is still in force, called for. He's apparently against any kind of federal action vis-a-vis abortion. No federal funding and nothing that would encourage abortion. He considers the criminalization of abortion unrealistic, unwise. And there at the end, he says he believes now that life begins at conception and that abortion is the taking of a human life. But to criminalize abortion is unwise and unworkable. So what do you make of that position? It's a real possibility he could be on the docket for president in 2008. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Call during this break. 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850. Or email us. You've heard Fred Thompson's position clearly made. issuesetc@kfuo.org. When we come back, we'll find out what he had to say about gay marriage. Another big news story, the fallout from those California fires. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief were on the front lines in California, providing help for those in need and concern for both body and soul. Find out about what they're doing and help them do it. 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438. Or go to our website, issuesetc.org. Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief. We'll be right back. A little more audio open lines, then our Issues Etc. listener comment line.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.